Welcome to this special edition of Valley Voices. I'm Lucas Turner, hosting today in place of Amy Haddon Marsh. Today's guest is author and caving expert Richard Reinhardt. He's authored books like Colorado Caves and Eighth Wonder. He also worked as the editor of Colorado's Rocky Mountain Caving Journal from 1984 to 2014, and still works as the publication's digital editor. Today we're discussing the Witch's Pantry Cave, recently discovered in the footprint of Rocky Mountain Resources' proposed quarry expansion. Here now with Richard Reinhardt, one of the discoverers of the Witch's Pantry Cave. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely, yes.
Walk me through how the cave was discovered. Why were you in the area, and how did you stumble across the cave entrance?
Members of our organization have been interested in caves for many years in the region. A colleague of mine purchased Cave of the Clouds in Glenwood Canyon a few years ago, and through that, we were gaining interest in sort of exploring more of the mountainside of the southern flank of the White River Plateau. During that period, we started walking that mountainside, looking for any signs of caves, and it was right at about that time that the news came out that Rocky Mountain Resources was interested in expanding the Mid-Continent Quarry up onto the mountain into the area that we were actively beginning searches for caves, and so that definitely caught our attention. Through the years, you know, the last couple of years, started working with Glenwood Caverns, Steve Beckley there, you know, talking to him about potential for caves in the area. And the final piece of the puzzle was that in October of 2019, the Collier Consulting Survey came out. The Bureau of Land Management was kind enough to provide us a copy of that survey to look over that document. And in that, we looked at the various graphs, and the documentation indicated that there were very likely multiple caves throughout that entire flank of the plateau, that whole uplift of the Leadville limestone rock strata. And once we saw that, it was sort of confirming that we were on the right track of finding caves. It was just a question of finding, you know, an entrance that is passable. Now, we have to remember that back in 1895, when Charles Darrow found what's called today Glenwood Caverns, back then it was called Ferry Cave, it was a very tiny little hole. We're guessing probably no more than an inch in diameter, maybe smaller, because it literally was whistling at him and his friend when they were riding horses on Iron Mountain, and that caught their attention, so they dismounted, walked over to the little hole, looked at it, felt the wind blowing from it, and correctly assumed that there was probably a cave there, so they hired a force of men that dug it open and found 700 feet of passage, which became Ferry Cave and later on today's Glenwood Caverns. And so all of this was in mind when we were looking at that documentation from Collier Consulting and seeing that there was very strong indication of cave passage, you know, anywhere from 50 to 150 feet below the surface. And in late October, a friend of mine, Rob McFarland, agreed to join me on a day of hiking in that area. Rob's from Rifle and a member of the Cave Survey, too. And so we set up onto the mountain, walked one area, which wasn't too far from the transfer trail, and didn't see anything, so it was a bit discouraging. The area that we went to next was sort of our second choice for the day. And so we had split up to sort of cover more territory, and probably within, I don't know, 20 minutes of walking the area, Rob is calling to me to come up and join him. You know, I honestly was surprised when he was calling me so quickly, you know, to come up and see what he had found, because I didn't believe that we would find something that quickly. But sure enough, when I hiked back up the mountainside to where he was and he showed me the entrance, it was, you know, one of those moments where you say, wow, this is incredible that something like this can be so close to the city of Glenwood Springs, and yet no one had reported it through all these years, because other caves that are known and have been known, like Surprise Pit, are much more obscure in where they're located. And so it was, you know, just one of those moments that stick with you for the rest of your life, that, wow, this is potentially a very significant cave that may have lots of passage, may have beautiful formation rooms. It's anyone's guess at this point. And what we were particularly excited about were all the bones that were lying about in the cave, and that's because it is sort of hidden on the hillside there. You know, I was probably within 5 feet of it before I finally saw it, you know, behind the bushes there. Sure. And I suspect that animals for many centuries, if not thousands of years, have been running along that mountainside and been surprised and tumbled down into the cave itself to their deaths.
And that is why it is called Witch's Pantry, is that correct? Because of that very fact?
Yeah, it was just a few weeks to Halloween, and Rob sent me an email the next morning saying, you know, he thought about it overnight, and how would Witch's Pantry work for a name? And that seemed very appropriate, given the amount of bones that are just scattered about the floor there. We sort of joked that it was like a group of witches had been storing all those bones in there for some sort of witch's brew in the future. And so that's how it got its name, is just, you know, the Halloween theme, and then just all those bones that are there that certainly are the ones that we've looked at are, you know, very recent, probably from the last 50 years or so, domestic sheep mostly. But there's a very strong indication that if you dig down in the mound of dirt and debris that's fallen from the surface there, it's very probable that, you know, the deeper you go into that sediment, you know, the more ancient the bones will become. And it could be hundreds of thousands of year old bones, you know, at depth in that pile. And it just needs qualified paleontologists to come and do some work there.
One of the things that you've talked about is the potential for more caves in the area, or connecting caves, or a cave system. What makes you say that? What are the indicators for more caves in the area?
Sure, there are multiple indicators. One, if you think of the White River Plateau uplift, you know, this is horizontal rock strata that was literally faulted and tilted upward. So it's at a pretty steep angle going up to sort of the divide between the Cascade Creek region, you know, Oasis Creek, and No Name Creek, which swings around to the north there. That's about 10,500 feet up there. Glenwood is, what, 6,000 feet. So it's a lot of elevation gain. And so when the rock strata is uplifted like that along this monoclinal uplift, it fractures sort of in various fracture patterns. And geologists can talk at length about that, how, you know, limestone will preferentially break in particular faulting patterns. And you see that at Glenwood Caverns, that there's definite fault control there. There's jointing control. The passages follow sort of structures. You know, they're not randomly, you know, in the limestone. And so that was sort of a guide that's sort of what we might see up at the Witch's Pantry area. But then the Collier Consulting Survey, they ran a bunch of electrical resistivity and seismic surveys across the mountainside along the Transfer Trail at various points. And from what our cave scientists can see looking at those results, it does appear there's very even jointing. The anomalies that they point out in their own report, we feel, are mostly caves, and those are all very evenly spaced along the mountainside. And so that's another suggestion that any caves in that area will probably be strongly joint controlled and probably evenly spaced maze-like passages. And then the next point that we consider is that Groaning Cave, which is to the northeast along Deep Creek, it has about 15 miles of survey passage. It's the longest cave known in the state of Colorado. And that one is extremely joint controlled in the Leadville limestone. It's literally a maze, and there are parallel passageways and connecting passages and so on. And so the caves in the plateau really don't change that much from one area to another. They're all developed in the same rock. Many of them were created through the same uprising, you know, hot mineral water through the millennia. And so we feel that Groaning is a good example of sort of the perfect conditions for a sizable cave to form. Glenwood Caverns, which has 3.5 miles, is one of the larger caves in the state too. So we feel that there is very definitely a good possibility that either Witch's Pantry or the yet undiscovered other caves in the area could turn out to be significant in length too, that they could have thousands of feet, if not a mile or more of passage once they're fully explored.
So it's the existence of nearby cave formations similar, and the fact that where this is essentially the same type of, I don't know, geology, is that what you'd call it?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you look at Hubbard Cave, which is on the south rim of Glenwood Canyon above the Shoshone Power Plant, that cave, while it's closed currently by the Forest Service, has been surveyed and explored for well over a century. And in that cave, if you look at a map, it's all very joint controlled with parallel passageways and connecting passages. And so it's another very close example of a cave that is formed under similar conditions of uprising hot mineral water, reaching the fractured Leadville limestone, dissolving out the rock preferentially through there, and creating a cave that I think Hubbard Cave is a mile or so of passage. So These are all examples, and so it would be very unusual for this to have some other sort of pattern that wouldn't match other caves in the region. You know, we're just speculating at this point because we're honestly only 150 feet into the cave at this time before the season snowed shut, and we can't get there anymore. But we're hoping that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management will allow us to continue our exploration in the cave, and we need to do a little bit of digging there because there's some sediment that's washed in and blocked the passage that has some wind blowing from it. And so we feel if we're allowed to dig that open, it could lead to much more passage. And one other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that I know it's tempting for a lot of people in the Glenwood Springs area to want to run up there and go check it out for themselves and explore it. But keep in mind that this isn't like going to Glenwood Caverns. It's not like some big walking passage cave that you just sort of stroll around and look at formations. This has a pit entrance that you have to use a rope to get down, you know, so it's definitely potentially dangerous. And once you're in the bottom of the entrance room, there's a very tight crawlway that is maybe 10 inches high. And so if you think of that, that's less than a foot. And so it's very low to crawl through. And then that's where it drops down to the lower level. And so this is not a beginner sort of cave. And so we're just encouraging the folks of Glenwood and Colorado to allow our group, you know, with the National Speleological Society, to work with the Bureau of Land Management and properly explore and document this cave. You know, we think that they will. You know, we've worked with the BLM for about 25 years at this point, so we have a good working relationship with them. And all indications that we've had from the Bureau, you know, in SILT, is that they definitely have interest in learning more about this cave, and they want to make sure that this is done correctly and there's not any damage or difficulties with the resource itself, which I think is a very promising situation, given that it's in the middle of the footprint for the Mid-Continent Quarry expansion.
Right. And so if Rocky Mountain Resources were able to do the quarry expansion, how would that affect this cave and other caves that might potentially be in the area?
Documentation shows that the quarry, where it's going to be expanded up onto the mountainside overlooking Glenwood, would completely take away the Leadville limestone strata all the way down into the Dyer Dolomite, which is the underlying rock formation. And so if this is allowed, Witch's Pantry will completely be obliterated. It will be gone. It, you know, they'll blow it up, they'll tear it out, they'll grind it up into aggregate to end up in road base and, you know, cement in eastern Colorado. And so, you know, we would lose a cave that already the Bureau of Land Management says is considered significant. And certainly all these other cave passages that we can see in the graph materials provided by Collier Consulting, those indicate that there are other caves there. And so those will be completely obliterated, you know, destroyed, blown up, you know, taken away. And then so we would be looking in 20 to 60 years from now, just sort of, you know, the open scar there and go, wow, there, you remember there used to be a lot of caves on this mountainside that had wonderful areas. And it'd be sort of like people who look back at old photographs of, you know, areas of underneath Lake Powell that had been flooded completely and are lost now. But at least at Lake Powell, you know, at some point they may remove the Glen Canyon Dam and the lake will drain, and these areas will become open again and visible, and people can go back to them. Whereas this, you know, once they quarry it away, it's gone forever. And that's why we're so concerned about this project, is that we just found a significant cave in Colorado, and that's not something that we do every single year or every day. This is something that does happen on occasion, but it's the first cave I've been involved in discovering for several years now. And so, yeah, I have a little bit of a sort of emotional ownership with it, that I don't want to see this new cave that, you know, only now we're getting to see it, you know, in this year 2020. And to think that it could be destroyed completely is heartbreaking.
You're tuned in to Valley Voices on KDNK. Speaking today with Richard Reinhart, author and caving expert, about the recently discovered Witch's Pantry Cave. So you're a caver. You obviously love caves. Mm-hmm. I think caves are cool personally. My dad brought my siblings and I caving since we were little. But what is the broader significance of caves for somebody who hasn't been in a cave or doesn't understand the geology or a lot of these things that you're talking about? Why should they care?
I think the most successful part of caves is that they're unique and interesting and beautiful areas to go visit. Think about Glenwood Caverns. It has something on the order of 225,000 people a year who go and visit it. That is truly remarkable. That's literally National Park Service type numbers going to a private cave. So it's, you know, Glenwood Caverns is one of the most successful privately owned caves in the United States. You know, many commercial caves hope to have only, you know, if they have 30,000 people, that's a great year for them. And so that's easily the most accessible and reasonable thing for people to think about, is that they're cool places to visit and you see interesting sights you don't see on the surface. You know, they're unique environments. But if you look at it more from the scientific viewpoint, you're looking at things like cave life, unique life that lives within these caves, much of which hasn't been documented before. Glenwood Caverns has multiple unique species that biologists have discovered and documented over the last 20 years. We were working up at Sulphur Cave at Steamboat Springs. That's been known for 200 years now. And that cave, you know, while it has a very toxic atmosphere, has some of the weirdest and most unusual life. It's like literally like going to another planet, looking at some of these weird cave worms that live in the hot spring water in that cave. So that's scientifically interesting that you're finding these unique life forms that could have bearing on what maybe you might find in Mars or other planets or moons, that life is existing in these places. But you also think about microbial life, you know, bacteria and so on that live in these caves. And down in Carlsbad Caverns National Park, there's a cave called Lechuguilla Cave. It has about 150 miles of passage since it was dug open by Colorado cavers back in, I think it was 1986. You know, so it's had a huge amount of exploration and study in the 30 years since then. And they're finding there, you know, some of the microbial life that's being carefully, you know, discovered and then cultivated back in laboratories, that they have natural defenses, you know, these weird bugs and so on. You're not like insects or anything, but they're microscopic. And they have, you know, strong indications that, you know, somewhere down the road, 20, 30 years from now, that pharmaceuticals may be able to work with these weird life forms and find ways that, you know, to create medicines from them. And so at Glenwood Caverns, they're finding equally as unique microbial cave life living there. And so a place like Witch's Pantry is even more exciting, because here's a cave that has had no human impact to it at all. And so there's life within there that hasn't been touched by humans or even looked upon at this point, that need scientists to do studies. Well, they don't need it, but scientists want to do studies about them. And then you think, too, you know, the bones that are found in this cave, if paleontologists get a permit with the BLM and do a formal dig there, they can dig down in that dirt and rock strata and go back century after century, you know, way into the past, and they can find animals that used to live in the area. They can find spores from plant life and so on, you know, and they can really sort of start putting together a picture of what the climate was like here in Colorado 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 10,000, 50,000, that's all helpful when you're dealing with climate change and sort of saying, okay, well, you know, 50,000 years ago, it was average temperature in Colorado must have been in the 30s because, you know, all the, you know, the plant spores we're finding and pollen and whatever, this is all from, you know, heavy forests and so on. But then they might look back further and go, oh, well, in this period, 400,000 years ago, it was all a desert environment. And so that leads to increased knowledge and understanding of our natural world. And so that's why paleontologists who have heard about this particular site think that it's incredibly important. And other sites like this, Natural Trap Cave in northern Wyoming, several dig projects over the years, you know, by universities have found Pleistocene and older animal life that used to live along the Wyoming-Montana border. So it's just incredible studies can be undertaken. And I think that's important for, you know, all Americans.
To wrap this up, mm-hmm. what do you expect to happen moving forward? Will this spur mm-hmm. more robust cave searching in the area? And do you think this cave discovery will impact the proposed quarry expansion by Rocky Mountain Resources?
We would like to see, you know, in the coming months or so, as conditions improve on the plateau and snow melts, and we can, again, at least hike up there, eventually drive once they reopen the road for the summer season. We'd like to work with the Bureau of Land Management and continue not only exploration of the cave through our little proposed dig there that we want to push through the tight spot, but we also would really like to get some paleontologists up there to sort of start poking around more at that bone and dirt pile to see what's happening. We'd like to talk to the Bureau, too, about potentially if we find that there's all sorts of people who are curious and want to go up there and look at it, you know, we don't want to see people falling in and getting hurt because that's not good for them and it's not good for science or for cavers or the BLM. And so we really like to work with them that this cave may very well merit some sort of a, you know, a protective fence around it or, you know, maybe even a big gate over the entrance. I'm not sure. But that's all things that the Colorado Cave Survey, in consultation with the Bureau of Land Management and Silt, can come up with. Big question with all this is that if the survey and the BLM say, yeah, we want to get this cave protected, this is important for paleontology and finding new passage and so on, it's in the middle of the quarry site. So do they want to put in, you know, $100,000 to put in a gate system and so on if they then 2 months later or 6 months later tell the quarry, yeah, you're good to go with your mining project. You know, we don't care what people of Glenwood or anyone else has to say. Go ahead and mine away. That's sort of a big question here is, can they protect this cave, you know, for science and for exploration, but then also at the same time, you know, allow a big quarry to come and destroy the whole thing? You know, that's sort of an incompatible issue here. Mm-hmm. And so there really has to be some studies and some well thought out considerations of what can go on here. Personally, I think that this discovery is enough that the consulting companies working with Rocky Mountain Resources in their permit process, it all said, well, we don't think there's any caves in this area. So you don't have to worry about groundwater coming down. You don't have to worry about cave life. You don't have to worry about bats or anything like that. But now that's all changed because we now have a cave there. It's not huge at this point, but it has very good promise owing to wind flow blowing from it, which suggests, you know, voids beyond, that this could become a major cave. And so now it really is a game changer there that the Bureau of Land Management has this basic issue that they have to resolve, and that is, you know, is mining more important or is science and potentially recreation, you know, more important? You know, this is conceivably the sort of place that, let's say that the stars align and they say the quarry isn't going to be approved and Rocky Mountain Resources goes elsewhere and does their quarry. So everyone's happy in Glenwood. It's wonderful. You know, cavers push this cave more. Let's say that there's wonderful big rooms found and just really cool stuff. Given where it's at, you know, it's conceivable that the Bureau of Land Management at that point may do something like what the Forest Service is doing up at Spring Cave, you know, over near Meeker, that they may, during the summertime, say, okay, we're going to have, this is a public recreation spot, and so we're going to allow, you know, public permits for people to go in there, and we're going to run, you know, limited wild tours with cave rangers that we bring in during the summer season, and that's an opportunity then for more recreation and for the public to come and see this cave and see whatever wonderful things are yet to be found. And so that's all a very intriguing future, but it definitely depends on this whole environmental impact statement process that's just beginning. And I think over the next 2 years, we'll see which way this is going to go. You know, is it going to be the destruction of that mountainside and crippling of the economy in Glenwood Springs? Or is the Bureau going to come down on the side of science and recreation and, you know, what everybody in Glenwood wants, and that is to maintain the huge resort recreation atmosphere of the city.
Excellent. Well, this is really fascinating, and I really appreciate your time today.
Sure.
Here with Richard Reinhart with the Colorado Cave Survey and co-discoverer of the Witch's Pantry Cave near Glenwood Springs. And who did you discover the cave with? What was his name?
His name is Rob McFarland, and he is a resident of Rifle.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Richard.
You're welcome, and thanks for your interest. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Valley Voices on KDNK. I'm Lucas Turner.